Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. My answers are posted every week on Mondays, and you can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask me, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. If there were a productive genius alive today who had found objectivism early on, would his example have cultural power? If he would be like Michelangelo or Newton and explicitly advocate subjectivism, would he be a deterrent to the current intellectuals and an example to the public? I would have to say he alone, as an isolated genius, would not have a cultural effect. He would require the right philosophic context. Now, they do have Michelangelo today. They do know Newton today, but it doesn't affect the culture positively because of the corrupt philosophy. Now, of course, such people within the context of philosophy would have a huge effect. But now let me stress this. This does not mean these people have no effect without the right philosophic context. What it does mean is a single, isolated one has no effect. But if there were a Michelangelo in sculpture and one in literature and one in education and one in physics, etc., so that you get the idea of a whole cultural movement, that would be different because people would then have to pay attention and see what's going on. But one genius can be written off. Now, even that development would not stop the intellectuals, but it would be a big help, a huge help in being able to promote the right philosophy. So there's a reciprocity here. The right philosophy makes the geniuses in the various fields appreciated and influential, but they themselves, if they subscribe to the right philosophy, have a big influence on promoting it further. Here's a question on fortune tellers, card readers, spiritualists, and other such people that claim to have power over luck, the future, the dead, whatever. Since they do not actually possess these abilities, should these people be prosecuted for fraud if they sell these alleged services? No, certainly not. Ideas, no matter how irrational, are outside the province of the government. The fact that these ideas are totally irrational doesn't mean the government has a justification for coming in and stopping them. All philosophies make promises. All religions promise heaven or some form of it. Socialism promises utopia. Objectivism promises happiness that no other philosophy can deliver. Now, is the government supposed to judge which of these is true and which of these is fraudulent? I mean, that would be the end of free speech, the end of freedom. There is no legally definable fraud, no matter how crazy the promise is, if it's for something that the person voluntarily goes into and accepts. Now, there's a law against material fraud. You tell the guy you'll deliver the piano to his house, he gives you $1,000, and you take off and don't. That's fraud. But that is not what you're talking about here. Never give the government any power over deciding whether an idea is rational or not. Any idea. Did Ayn Rand ever read her own novels for enjoyment? Why or why not? As far as I know, she did not, from cover to cover. I do remember once in a while, she would look up some quote that she wanted to use in a speech, and then she would say, I was carried along irresistibly by it. But I don't remember her ever reading them from cover to cover. I never did discuss that question with her. But for what it's worth, my answer would be 100% no. I never, ever read any books of mine from cover to cover. I never read them almost at all. I was so sick of each one because I put so many years into it and so much editing into it. It was virtually memorized by the time the publisher had it. So, you got a brief moment of pleasure when you it first comes out in the stores. And after that, it's the dead past, I think maybe 10, 20 years later. Once in a while, you pick up one for some reason and skim a little bit. And the feeling I had is, not bad, it's better than I thought. But that's it. To sit down and read it, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it if I was paid. Now, here's two quick questions from a young man or woman who describes himself as lonely and living far away. So I'm going to answer two from him or her. First, why is life hard? Why does both thought and the achievement of values require effort? Is the effort a part of the nature of values? In other words, something that doesn't require effort to attain cannot be of value. No, the definition of value does not include the need of effort. Values, according to objectivism, apply to all living things. For instance, animals, food and shelter, etc., are values, but it does not require effort in any way comparable to the human situation. Effort comes in with man because he has a volitional consciousness. He has free will. He has to choose to exercise and mobilize his consciousness in order to act and achieve values. And that is a very different thing from the animals, because animals can't be corrupt. Human beings can if they decide that they're opposed to initiating that effort. Now, is it hard? Well, sometimes, and in part, it's hard. If you're, for instance, in my case, if you're writing something and you don't know what's wrong with what you wrote, but you know something is wrong, and it's really hard, you want to just leave the table and run away, then it's hard. But that's not the only form of effort. You know, you can watch an opera in fully conscious, enjoy it thoroughly, and the full consciousness adds to, substantially to your enjoyment. That's effort, but it's not effort in the sense of difficult work. So you better read my book on Opar where I discuss that. And now the other question. Why is it so hard to recognize a rational philosophy if you don't hold one? Is this a part of human nature? No. That is because of the world that we live in today and the philosophies that are dominant. You don't need to have a rational philosophy to recognize one when it's presented to you. And most of you listening to me would be in that position. I certainly was. All you have to be is honest and not totally brainwashed, and then you can recognize what you see. But today, the majority of people in this regard are brainwashed. They don't know the issues of philosophy. They accept without question what's going on today. But that's a problem of our culture. It's not a problem of human nature. If someone held all the same ideas as Ayn Rand, would he be able to be as great as her? Do you hold all of the same essential ideas as Ayn? If so, do you hold the same creative power as her, or is there an element of greatness that cannot be learned? Right ideas are not equivalent to greatness. They don't necessarily lead to it at all. In fact, most of the time, they don't. And in fact, they're not even necessary, depending on how you mean by greatness. Now, in the general sense, I take greatness to mean an exceptional innovator in a demanding area. And I contrast it with, you know, the ordinary, the follower, the minor thinkers, the disciples, you know, the day-by-day type practitioners. So, for instance, Alexander the Great, well, he's called the Great, was great. Dwight Eisenhower was, you know, just a schmo. Well, not everybody who's not great is as bad as him, but he's certainly not great, to take it an example. Now, greatness is, therefore, a delimited and stands for your what you can do in some field. So it's possible in men who are split, such as Einstein, who is great in physics and nothing or sub-nothing in many other fields. And you can even be totally corrupt by the definition I gave you. Kant, for instance, is a great philosopher in the sense that he was an exceptional innovator in a demanding area. In fact, in my opinion, prior to Ayn Rand, there were only three great philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, and Kant. I explain why in my dim book. And two of them are completely wrong and have the wrong ideas, but by the three stand out for a fundamental reason. You can read the book to see. They were innovators, never equal. Now, I think that the good type of greatness does imply good ideas to an extent, but contradictions of it are always possible. Now, you say to me, do I hold the same creative power as her? Obviously, I do not. If you want a metaphor, which I know is going to get me in trouble, but the time I met her, I thought of it like, I am Moses, and she's giving the commandments. That is, you know, a religious way, and I don't mean it, of course, of saying, I am taking down her ideas and making them available publicly. That is not a category that belongs under being great. Now, I do think that in the dim book, I went beyond the earlier books, but I still would never compare. It's very difficult to compare anybody to Ayn Rand. Then the question is, can greatness be taught or learned? No, not as such, because it involves innovation, creativity. And by definition, this is something that has never been done before. So how are you going to teach people to do it? The only way is you could teach better methods of thinking, but what is required to make these unprecedented breakthroughs is not something that the people who haven't made them can tell you how to do. I mean, if there were schools in greatness, you know, they would turn them out. Recently, New York Yankee Derek Jeter got his 3,000th hit by hitting a home run. The fan in the stands who got the ball decided to give it to Jeter instead of selling it for around $250,000. What does objectivism have to say on the matter? Well, what is wrong with that? I assume that the fan admired the man so much that he wanted him to have the memento of his success. Now, that was more important to him than the money. The selfishness does not equal money as the only value or as the highest value. There's nothing whatever wrong with that. He's paying tribute to someone he admires. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.